Well, hello everyone. I know I did a video yesterday that talked about Matt Goodwin, but since I made that, extraordinary things have been afoot because Matt Goodwin released a new book called Suicide of a Nation, and reviews of that book have started coming out, and it has been revealed that he relied quite heavily on AI to write the book, which has led him to now receive the nickname MattGPT. Now I'm going to read some of these reviews of these books before we get going. And let's have a little bit of fun with this. We all hate Matt Goodwin, and why not give him a jolly good old kicking? But before I get going, there is a serious point here. Okay, there's a serious point. As the author of many books, as the author of 10 books that I worked really hard on, that I researched. I mean, you get out some of these books. Here's Defenders of Liberty, okay? A book I worked bloody hard on. And you can have a look at the number of books and footnotes and time and effort I spent writing this book, okay? You know, and I wrote it myself. I didn't have any AI. And you can pick up any one of my books, okay? And you'll see that the time and the effort to get the written style, you know, as good as possible, as per Foundations of Writing, crystal clear prose, good Anglo-Saxon prose. I guess there are different philosophies of how to approach prose style. My philosophy is of the plain English school, like George Orwell or like, you know, The Economist magazine. I'm very much from that school. If you take Foundations of Writing, that is my approach. Sir Ernest Gower's Plain Words. And, you know, in terms of scholarship, I basically, you know, leave no corner unturned. No corner unturned. For example, I'll give you an example here, okay, of how seriously, you know, one should take one's scholarship, okay? And I take this seriously, and I do it out of consideration for my reader. I have there all of Carlyle's works, okay? But over there, I've got an entire shelf full of secondary literature on Carlyle. Not just the primary literature, the secondary literature. That is books that have been written on Thomas Carlyle. In fact, I probably have one of the best libraries of Carlyle secondary literature anywhere in the country, okay? Because I acquired all of the secondary literature on Carlyle, as well as looked up journal articles and so on. And I did all of that for a single chapter on Carlyle in this book, in Prophets of Doom. And you can see all of my secondary reading on Carlyle, okay? And I did the same for every author in here. And I did the same, you know, for all of my books. This is an important part of doing research. You have to kind of review the field. You have to read what other people have said about it. You have to, you know, acquire, you know, you have to try to make yourself the top one percentile in that thing. Even if you're just going to write a chapter on it, that's the way I've always approached my own scholarship, my own work. And I take it seriously. And I don't, I mean, the thing is, you don't have to do all of that, but I've always gone to the next level to make sure that the chapter I'm writing on Carlyle can be the best possible chapter I am capable of, okay? And I'm only going to be able to do that if I'm aware of what everybody else has already said about Carlyle within the best of your ability. Obviously, with some authors, with Shakespeare, for example, you know, you'll never cover the entire range of stuff written on Hamlet because thousands of articles come out every single year. You know, you can just make a good, you can make a good fist of it. But with most topics, a lot of topics aren't like that, okay? So you could, you know, make a real go of covering the literature. And with Goodwin's book, which is about immigration, it's about mass immigration, it's about topics like, you know, Islamic immigration into Britain. There is a pretty big, well, I mean, even in this room, I've got Douglas Murray's book. I've got Hitchens here. I've got I've got loads of books here on this sort of issue, you know, Strange Death of Europe by Murray. I've got, there are just so many books on this particular topic, you know, the decline of Britain, what has happened to Britain, and the impact of mass immigration on Britain. Okay, so it's not like this is a field that is brand new. This is something that people have been writing about for decades at this point, okay? Tons of books on it. So, and the fact that he didn't bother to even, like, do the bare minimum, the fact that he didn't treat his audience with respect, I think shows the hubris and the arrogance of Goodwin, which came across very strongly in his interview, that was also awful, by the way, with Pete McCormack. He comes across somebody who has a disdain for ordinary people. And, you know, one of the reviews, I'm not going to read Mary Harrington's article in Unheard, where she tried to defend Goodwin a bit. Her defense was like, well, it depends on who your readership is. You know, this is for a kind of general readership, a general audience. As someone who writes books for a living, I disagree with this. I think that the general reader can be treated, you shouldn't insult their intelligence, and they can be treated with a modicum of respect. Okay. All right. Well, you may say I go a bit over the top. You know, I have an academic background and I go to town. I have lots of footnotes and I make sure I, you know, cross all my T's and dot all my I's. But it's still possible to have good scholarship. I mean, look at Abolition of Britain. That this is a book written by a journalist for a general reader. Okay. But he still bothers to reference, and he, you know, he's articulate and he writes well. Okay, so Hitchens, in this book, which is for a general reader, still isn't insulting the audience, even though a lot of the people reading it would be Daily Mail readers or whatever. So the idea that, you know, oh, because your audience is a bunch of kind of slot, you know, people who vote for this sloppiest party, we can treat them with disdain, I don't agree with that line of argument from Mary Harrington, okay? Anyway, before we get going, you know, given that I'm talking about writing and research, you can pick up Foundations of Research, Foundations of Writing, Foundations of Logic, Trivium, so that when you come to write your book, okay, you're actually equipped with the skills to do this. The irritating thing about this with Goodwin is that he is actually an academic, right, by background and by training. He has written books before. He knows how to do this stuff that I'm talking about. Okay, I don't know how good a writer Goodwin is. Probably not that good, judging by his interview appearances and so on. But, you know, he knows how to do the basics. He's an academic by background, which means he is deliberately fobbing off his audience by writing this awful book. Okay, so anyway, pick up the Trivium, and now we're going to have some fun. We're going to read a number of different interviews of Goodwin. Now, I'm not going to pull them up on screen because I'm going to be jumping around a little bit, and so you're going to have to just look at my ugly mug while I read this. Okay, so this is John Merrick in the New Statesman, and the article is called "Matt Goodwin's Intellectual Suicide." In his new book, reformed in-house academic set out to articulate his ideas. He produced trash. Okay. This is, I mean, you know, some people have actually called for Nigel Farage to investigate the, potential academic fraudulence here, because he's fabricated quotes and he's actually bringing the reputation of Reform UK into disrepute. And there's one guy, Tim Montgomery, who was actually calling for, Farage actually to take action over this. Whether Goodwin will be suspended or gotten rid of or whatever, I don't know. What I do know is that, as things stand, Goodwin is an absolute liability for Reform. He had a disastrous podcast appearance where he was seen to fob off a 20-year-old boy, Pete McCormack's son, with an awful answer, where he came across like he despises the public, where he basically argued that plebs have to be kept out of Parliament, okay, and that he, right, as the containment agent, should be entrusted to save this country. That was basically the argument he made on Pete McCormack. And then in the same week to release this book and to basically torch his reputation, which is now being torn to shreds. If I was running Reform, I'd get rid of him yesterday. I mean, losing to Hannah Spencer was bad enough, but he is, I mean, one of the things, you know, I'm a compassionate guy as a Shakespeare scholar. I have picked up some of Shakespeare's negative capability, his capacity to have empathy, even for people he hates. You know, like Shakespeare hated Malvolio, but he still somehow saw the human there. Or like, I don't think he liked Shylock very much, but he still gave him the hath not a GUI speech. Okay. For Goodwin, he said a number of times on that McCormack interview that he's wrecked his life or that his wife is in tatters or whatever. And he said it enough times, okay, to make it seem like he may be going through some sort of crisis. I hope that, you know, whatever that crisis is, he overcomes it. But he's probably better off overcoming it out of politics. You know, he needs to get off camera and he needs to stop. Like, I mean, he is an embarrassment at this point. You know, he's known widely now as the Alan Partridge of Reform, not just from my videos. I've read plenty in that Mary Harrington article. She quoted somebody else. Somebody else on Substack had written an article likening him to Partridge. People on the left think he's like Alan Partridge. Obviously, you've seen my videos on this. But it's worse than that. It's actually worse than that. I don't think Alan Partridge would have turned out a sloppy piece of work like this. And, I mean, even Partridge is not as inherently kind of like hostile and dislikable as Goodwin was in that McCormack interview, okay? This guy is toast, I'm telling you. And frankly, despite my natural capacity for empathy, he deserves it. Why does he deserve it? Hillary Clinton style, basket of deplorables, turning on the base, attacking the base, attacking the online right, dismissing people like me who know better than, I actually know better than Matt Goodwin, okay? He thinks he knows better than me. I know better than Matt Goodwin, okay? I can take that to the bank. Reform, at the moment, are absolutely nosediving. They've peaked in the polls, and I guarantee you they're going to struggle in these May elections coming up. They're going to underperform, and I think they have blown their chance. You know, everybody was suggesting they're going to have these huge majorities. They are blowing that chance. Wide open goals in front of Nigel, and he's skied it, and he's kicked it into row Z, and he's kicked it into the corner flag over and over and over again with unforced errors. Because he's been listening to pillocks like Goodwin, people who don't know their ass from their elbow, or people, even worse, if he's in there as a deliberate containment agent, which he probably is. That's what I mean. Maybe he's deliberately just torching himself in order to, you know, in order to like help the left or something. So anyway, let us now read this article from the New Statesman. Very good publication, even though it's a left-wing publication. The New Statesman is superior to The Spectator in much the same way that LBC is superior to Talk TV or GB News. All right, so this is Merrick in The New Statesman. Let's get this out of the way early. Matt Goodwin's new self-published book, Suicide of a Nation, is bad. Very bad. In fact, even for the increasingly gimcrack world of the British right, it is a shockingly poor piece of writing and research, made worse by the fact that Goodwin was until recently a fairly well-respected academic. As the writer Andy Twelves and others have catalogued, the book is filled with falsely attributed quotes, should say quotations, by the way, all of which, oddly enough, have the same flattened style as Goodwin himself. Misinterpreted data and dubious, out of context, and plain just made up statistics. Of the only 12 footnotes in the book, the vast majority of which are in the first chapter, as if he gave up with references after the first few pages, two contain links that still have their ChatGPT source code embedded in them. Of the rest, five. This is 5 out of 12 footnotes in the whole book are to Matt Goodwin's own blog, while another is to a Telegraph article about something Goodwin himself wrote. This is really quite extraordinary. It's also extraordinary, by the way, that Goodwin didn't bother to get a contract with the press. Okay, of the 10 books I've published, all of them have decent presses, okay? You know, from various, some of the university presses, some of them are Imperium, some press, which I think is a great press. You know, the latest one was with Imprint Academic. And, you know, what happens is you sign a contract and they, you know, you then get royalties from them. What Goodwin is probably thinking is that if he put this book out himself, he could keep 100% of the royalties for himself. It's probably what he's like. It's kind of like a cash and grab from Goodwin, because he didn't want to bother with the rigmarole of having editors or, you know, having a deadlines or anything like that. He's just kind of rush released this himself, which in itself is, let's just say, frowned upon in the world of publishing. Anyway, all of which is to say that you will almost certainly not read this book. I mean, I certainly won't. I will not read this book. It doesn't matter if you give me a copy or throw a copy at me. I'll put it straight in the bin. Okay, not my hot bin, because probably the cheap paper he's got it won't decompose. Anyway, but in an attempt to move beyond its most obviously egregious aspect, which I imagine will continue to be aired on social media, and to discover that little thought animates it, the task comes to me to summarize the worldview of Matt Goodwin, aspiring tub thumper. Britain, Goodwin tells us, is declining fast. Our borders have been eroded and our public services run down, while our living standards deteriorate and the welfare bill skyrockets. In fact, such is the state of the nation that if it continues on its current path, it will soon cease to be. Within just one generation, he writes, Britain will no longer be Britain. England will no longer be England. The country that we still just about know and recognize, the country our ancestors built, will be no more. If Britain is dying, then it is not the result of murder. It is death by suicide at the hands of a mendacious class of government and corporate mandarins he dubs the new elite, who have taken over the country since the Blairite victory in 1997, the annus horribilis for the new right. Before then, Goodwin says, Britain was dominated by an old elite of a kindly and patrician group comprised of aristocrats, politicians, clergy, and intellectuals. They were patriotic, valued duty, and felt a deep kinship and obligation to the nation. The new elite, on the other hand, are driven by something else entirely, an insidious ideology that Goodwin, following the right-wing Canadian marketing psychologist Gadsad, calls suicidal empathy, a one-way, unconditional compassion that always favors outsiders over your own people. The new ideology, it's ironic, isn't it? It's ironic. The new ideology means that our governing class are now more concerned about being on the right side of history and protecting the vulnerable and the needy, particularly if they're not white and native British, than promoting a strong and virile indigenous national culture. What's worse is that they openly disdain ordinary people as not only hopelessly provincial, but morally inferior. Such is the rot at the heart of the establishment that their loyalties lie not with Britain, but with a global class of other elites, rootless cosmopolitans, you might say. This new elite, all of this is very ironic coming from Goodwin, isn't it? Who is literally one such elite, in my opinion. This literally somebody who's openly, you know, pledges fealty to another country all the time and dismisses anybody who has a problem with that. So it's rich coming from Goodwin, all of this. Anyway, the new elite of politicians, bureaucrats, NGO workers, and other assorted do-gooders who make up the global managerial class have struck their needle deep into the arm of Britain, infecting it with a new moral virus, a moral and institutional sickness. Such aggressive, near-masochistic rhetoric appears on nearly every page of Suicide of a Nation, a clear symptom of how far along the pipeline of the hard right Goodwin now is. He even drags out the old far-right canard about cultural Marxism to scare his readers, claiming that the, quote, the new elite followed the exact playbook outlined by the Marxist thinker Antonio Gramsci. Yet despite the suicide of the title, the book really isn't about the new elite at all. It's about immigration and the dire threat that Muslims pose to the country. Britain, Goodwin says, is now replete with, quote, segregated Muslim areas, blasphemy laws, and the rise of Islamic sectarianism in politics, the Pakistani rape gangs, anti-Semitism. The people we have been importing have come from cultures that are, quote, inferior and primitive, stuck in cultural codes, behaviours and lifestyles that Western nations abandoned centuries ago. He even doubles down on his controversial claim that being British, quote, requires more than a passport. They might be administratively British, he writes, but they are not one of us in the true sense. After only a few pages, you are left with the distinct impression that the talk of, quote, suicidal empathy was in reality a get-out-of-jail-free card, allowing him to rail against incompatible foreign cultures and the demographic replacement of the white British by a foreign tide of nefarious invaders who terrorise, murder, rape and assault, all while offering some plausible deniability for any racist intent. Immigrants pursuing their own interests are not to blame for any of this, he writes, after castigating them in the harshest possible terms for several chapters. The people I blame are those in Westminster who rule over this. Yeah, right, says the New Statesman. Yeah, and I actually share the New Statesman's concerns with this. I always think this is a strategy of what I call the counter jihad, to focus the ire on specific communities, specific people, specific migrants, as a misdirection, you know, for fighting like the actual people who made all of this possible, the government and so on. And it's obvious that Goodwin is kind of leaning into that sort of frame, because it's obvious where he's coming from. So that was obvious on his McCormack interview as well. If this was a bleak picture, Goodwin predicts that it will only get worse as the demographic collapse continues, with Muslim birth rates outpacing those of white Brit and immigration rates continuing to accelerate. In the process, British culture itself will soon be erased. Yet, quite what the culture that Goodwin strides forth to defend reads as both almost entirely empty and unbelievably fragile. Quote from Goodwin, as mass immigration continues to import into Britain radically different cultures from outside Europe, he writes, the core of the nation is being gradually weakened and will eventually give away altogether. To this end, Goodwin marshals Roger Scruton, who apparently once called Britain's national culture our, quote, delicate spirit. I haven't checked this one, so who knows if it's real. Such a precious spirit is no match for the brutish foreign hordes with their hostile ways of life, which rather raises the question, if British culture really is this delicate, then how has it managed to survive for this long? Scruton, whatever his politics, was nothing if not a cultured, an erudite writer. Not so Goodwin, whose artless prose and deadened style reads more like the transcribed mumblings of the very worst pub bore than a spirited defence of Britishness. Britain, he writes, gave the world liberty, reason, science, the Industrial Revolution, the English language, and Shakespeare. Now, you're tempted to respond, the best it can generate is vapid and platitudinous screeds with all the poetry of a live, laugh, love sign. On every page are passages that clang so hard they set your teeth on edge. Sentences like, quote, if shared language is the glue, then a shared national identity is the anchor. And patronizing asides, asking you to, quote, think about that for a minute. And on it runs. There are apparently never-ending lists, all with a couple of paragraphs. The ruling class and their cheerleaders, Keir Starmer, Sadiq Khan, Tony Blair, Emily Maitlis, Alistair Campbell, James O'Brien, places like Newham, Brent, Ealing, Harrow, Leicester, Slough, Tower Hamlets or Westminster, Enfield, Luton, Barnet, Camden, Boston and Cambridge, Peterborough, Watford, Reading, Coventry, Nottingham and Southampton. There is an assembly of clichés and cheap rhetorical tricks. The hard-working, law-abiding majority. The hour is late, but not too late. Hundreds of sentences that it's not X, it's Y. And throughout the same hollering, maddening, dum-de-dum-de-dum-de-dum rhythm with one thing following painfully, agonizingly after another, all without the depth or style or range or tone. Winston Churchill would have laughed. Margaret Thatcher would have kicked the table over. An actual quote from Goodwin. Well, quite. I mean, if he, the thing is, I don't think he's got the self-awareness to be embarrassed for himself. I don't think he has the intelligence even to feel shame and embarrassment for this. He hasn't got the ability, I don't think. If this were AI generated, it would almost be a relief. The sad truth, however, is that even ChatGPT could not come up with anything this dead. This is not the language of AI. It's another digital phenomenon, the language of Elon Musk's X. Log on to social media and you'll find essay-length posts by blue-checked right-wingers, all composed in the same style. Short, clipped phrases and paragraph of only one or two sentences, larded with dodgy data and spiced, unverifiable conjecture. That same social media also seems to have provided Goodwin with much of the book's content, which will be familiar to anyone who has even had a cursory scan of right-wing Twitter over the past year or two. What a horrible indictment of the Tory boys, of the whole ecosystem that Goodwin is from, the Pimlicos and the Jacuzzis and that whole scene. This is an actual indictment of it, correctly being lampooned and lambasted by an intellectually superior new statesman coming from the left. And it is correct for them to berate you in this way. I join them in berating you in this way. You deserve it. You absolutely deserve it. The political right, who have hosted Goodwin's writing for years, are, we must conclude, a thoroughly post-literate bunch. They may be buying the book if its rush up the Amazon bestseller charts is any indication, but it's hard to see them reading, much less enjoying it. Perhaps we knew this already. After all, it is not from literature or art that the modern British right gets its insights and its influence, but from AI and the gassy brain farts of social media. From this, Suicide of a Nation is perfectly cast, all surface, no depth, a grab bag of deconceptualized data and empty provocations. What a perfect description of Goodwin that is. According to the preface, the book was written in December 2025. Perhaps Goodwin wrote it with the idea that its release would coincide with his ascension to the Mother of Parliament as a Reform MP. Suicide of a Nation would have been a triumphant volley fired from the Palace of Westminster to the nation at large, announcing Goodwin as a major political figure. Aha! Think of it. He was probably dreaming of that. When I beat Hannah Spencer in Gorton and Denter, vote for her as a vote for Keir Starmer. Aha! Think of it. Think of his own horrible little delusions. That'd certainly show the new elite. It wasn't to be. On the 26th of February, Goodwin was decisively defeated in Gorton and Denton by election by Hannah Spencer of the Greens. There is a lesson in this about mistaking short-term popularity for, talk about, this is a big word, perspicacity. inflated self-regard for mass appeal. And he still published this book in its aftermath helps demonstrate the utter vapidity of much of the British right. What an accurate statement that is. The utter vapidity of much of the British right. Goodwin, it can no longer be doubted, is a major figure in Reform. One of their house intellectuals, how embarrassing for Reform, and a prominent member of the party's inner circle, chosen to be their candidate in what they hoped would be a set piece by-election campaign. That when he came to set down his ideas, all he could do was produce trash like this is surely a poor sign indeed. Since he left academia, Goodwin has set and made himself a lucrative career, peddling the same sort of sensationalist pap on TV and online, claiming to speak for the forgotten white majority and willfully misrepresenting written social forces for his own gain. If the experience of the past month means anything, then it should lead to an even small amount of critical self-reflection. Britain is telling him something, but Goodwin, we can be sure, won't hear it. And yes, we can be sure that the tin-eared, pig-headed Goodwin won't hear. He'll double down. He'll continue to call all of you dot names. He'll continue to try to claim that this is some sort of victory, even though the entire world, the entire country is laughing at him. So that's the first one. Let's read the next one now by Ben Sixsmith in The Critic. This has been fun. I've really enjoyed it, and I'm going to continue enjoying it because Matt Goodwin made himself an enemy of me, my audience, and all of you. He has made himself an enemy. So we don't give him help or legs up, or we delight in his failures. That's what friend enemy means. That's what writing off the online and the youngsters and the 20-year-olds and the people who want change in this country, that's what kind of smacking them in the face and calling them a basket of deplorables and ignoring them and saying, actually, I know better. This is what you get. You fucking deserve it. So let's all relish in the downfall of this clown, of this charlatan who's been exposed in front of the entire country. Ben Sixsmith, suicide of an author's credibility. You know, I met Matt Goodwin, I looked him in the eyes, and I knew immediately he was not trustworthy, he's not a good person, and can never, ever be somebody that I'd willingly kind of work with or collaborate with in any single way. Okay, I knew that already. Anyway, suicide of an author's credibility. Ben Sixsmith. Here is an exceptionally easy argument to make. Mass immigration is ensuring that the historical majority in Britain is becoming a minority. This is the result of policies that have been pursued regardless of popular opinion. This has had many kinds of destructive consequences. Nice start. Nicely written start. Ben Sixsmith using logic as well, using a nice logical syllogism here. You know, three-point argument from premises working to conclusion. Very nice. The first claim is so obviously true that one might as well deny the greenness of the grass. The second is proven by decades of broken promises. See Anthony Bowles' article, Immigration and Consent for More. The third requires argumentation, but I think that is clear if one considers hideous instances of terrorism, grooming gangs, violence, censoriousness, as well as broader trends of economic dependency and electoral sectarianism. Okay, good strong start from Sixsmith here. Again, this is not a difficult argument to make, so why make it so badly? Matt Goodwin's Suicide of a Nation is a very bad book. I'll just read that sentence again. Matt Goodwin's Suicide of a Nation is a very bad book. It reads like the book of a political operator extending his CV. The left-wing commentator Andy Twelves caused a stir on social media by pointing out various factual mistakes that appear to be non-existent quotes. Twelves speculates that those quotes are the result of AI hallucinations, which is plausible if not proven in the light of the fact that two of Goodwin's sparse footnotes contain source information from ChatGPT. In so much as Suicide of a Nation makes a form of argument sketched out the beginning of this article, there is a truth to it. But it contained a fundamental problem. It assumes that this argument is so true that there is no requirement to make it well. Slop is an overused term. No, it's not, Ben. It's an underused term. If anything, it's an underused term. Why? Because how is this happening? If you fucking cunts had listened to me, this wouldn't be happening. If anybody had listened to me, none of this shit would happen because Goodwin wouldn't even be in the Reform Party. So it's not an overused term. It's an underused term. Anyway, let me carry on. Slop is an overused term, but it feels painfully appropriate for a book that is spoon-fed to its audience. Goodwin, who had a long academic career before becoming a successful commentator, is not a man who lacks intelligence. Well, that's debatable in my opinion. I have never seen even a glimmer of intelligence in Goodwin in any of his performances. What I see is a kind of animal cunning, a kind of artless guile is how I would describe him. Okay, I wouldn't attribute intelligence. Animal cunning is what I would give Goodwin, okay? But he writes as if he thinks his audience lacks it. I did not write this book for the ruling class, writes Goodwin. I wrote it for the forgotten majority. Alas, he seems to think that the average member of the forgotten majority has the reading level of a dim-witted 12-year-old. As well as being stylistically simple, the book is full of annoying paternal asides. In the pages ahead, I shall walk you through what is happening to the country. In the next chapter, we shall begin our journey. Thank you, Mr. Goodwin. Can we stop for ice cream? The book is terribly derivative, with a title that reflects Pat Buchanan's Suicide of a Superpower and a subtitle, Immigration, Islam, Identity, that all but repeats that of Douglas Murray's The Strange Death of Europe, Immigration, Identity, Islam. Also, James Burnham famously wrote a book called Suicide of the West in 1960, I think it is, off the top of my head. And then, speaking of slop merchants, Jonah Goldberg also wrote a book called Suicide of the West many years later, which is bad. Read the Burnham one. Don't read that one. Anyway, it is, and I would say there's also a hint of the abolition of Britain by Peter Hitchens in the title of this book as well. Anyway, it is written in the humorless and colorless rhetorical style of AI. I am not saying it was AI generated. Indeed, a brief assessment using AI checkers suggests that it was not. I'm just saying that it might as well have been. There are a lot of highly dubious sourcing. Mr. Twelves did not exhaust the number of questionable quotes in the book. A nation cannot defend its borders, Goodwin claims, the Roman historian Livy wrote. We'll soon cease to be a nation. I can find no record of this quote. Language is the tie that connects the past with the future and binds together the citizens of the same nation. Goodwin claims that the lexicographer Noah Webster wrote this. Again, I could find no record of this quote. To be fair, perhaps Goodwin has one, but he should have included more footnotes. He is an academic. How did this not occur to him? Especially when he actually included 12 footnotes in the book to start with. So he started using footnotes and then didn't bother to cite any of his subsequent references. The writing is lazy. Goodwin, for example, twice refers to the Canadian psychologist Gadsad within 40 pages. Thank God, I thought it would have been a different Gadsad. But the arguments are also lazy. Would countries such as China, Saudi Arabia, or Japan tolerate this? Goodwin asks, after listing a series of crimes committed by asylum seekers. No, only Britain's elites are this deranged. Germany's, Sweden's. All this, what makes all this so strange is that it is so unnecessary. This should have been a book. This should not have been a book that was difficult to write thoroughly and effectively. Again, I can only assume that Goodwin does not feel if he estimates the argument well. His apparently abundant sales suggest that in cold economic terms, this might be true. Why? One explanation that occurs to me is that the right is unusually post-literate. Correct. Not all of the right, not all of the so-called right. I mean, I'm sensible centre-left, of course, but, you know, lots of people buy my books, you know, maybe not as many as Goodwin's, but those people, they're not post-literate. They're literate. They're educated. They're intelligent. People who watch this channel are intelligent. That's why I don't want to be associated with the likes of this slop nonsense that we're seeing here. That's why I've done everything possible to make it known I'm not, I don't want to be part of that thing over there, because, you know, it's, I don't want to be associated with it, because it's charlatanism, chicanery. It's a clown show, like I said in a talk you 2 years ago. Its success in marketing terms has been more prominent in the realms of social media and especially podcasts. The right has developed a formidable podcasting ecosphere in which Goodwin is a major player, where the failure to systematically articulate one's perspectives is less obvious. A book with this in mind could almost be an afterthought, an excuse for generating more podcasts. Secondly, this, and you know, this is what is disgusting to me. It's disgusting because the week before Goodwin appeared on Pete McCormack, I was on there. So if you have a look on Goodwin's thing there, I'm sitting there two videos down from him. That's not good. I don't want to be on the same page as Goodwin. Looks bad. It's bad. Look at this bad. Like, his reflective cringe is bad for everybody, is what I'm saying. It's bad for everybody. Awful. Anyway, the right has developed a formidable right. Okay, a book with it. Okay. Secondly, the specter of political correctness provides a built-in excuse for poor argumentation. The elites will attack me because I wrote this for you, writes Goodwin. They will call me every name under the sun because I dare to tell you the truth. Slop. Fucking slop. On Twitter, Goodwin is already claiming the left is having a meltdown and cherry-picking and misrepresenting. Ignore the losers on the left, writes Goodwin. Read it for yourself. We should read books for ourselves, but we should also read critiques for alternative assessment that we should ignore. Censoriousness does not excuse ignoring criticism. Finally, and most generously, perhaps people have a sense that urgent truths should be communicated plainly and directly. Of course, there is something to this. Arguments in many cases should be clear and accessible, but this should never come at the expense of accuracy. What is Goodwin claiming to provide, if not the truth? Nor should it entail dumbing down complex issues, and what should be done about the state of Britain is complex, as Goodwin surely realises, since he has spent much of the past months arguing with members of the Nationalist Party Restore. Besides, call it idealistic, but I just don't think the book that claims to defend British culture should be quite so short on eloquence, wit, scholarship, poetry, etc. British culture is pretty meaningless. If it has the literary standards of ChatGPT and the argumentative standards of a telemarketer. Goodwin is talking about major issues here: tremendous demographic and cultural change, democratic dysfunction, and societal pathologies. But to do it so carelessly diminishes their status rather than inspiring or persuading people. The narrative around suicide of a nation has nothing to do with immigration, Islam, and identity, but its stylistic and argumentative deficiencies. And the sad truth is that the author can hardly complain when there are so many of them. The lesson for his colleagues in Reform is not to let short-term popularity make them complacent when it comes to political and intellectual seriousness. I guarantee you that message will fall on deaf ears. Okay, you'll know if it lands because Goodwin will be out. That's what should happen. Let's see if that really does happen. I think they're going to double down. And I think that they, just like Goodwin, are going to do that. That's my suspicion. There is one more, which is Andy Twelves in The Spectator, which says, did Matthew Goodwin use AI to write his book? Do we need to go all the way through this one, or is it mostly the same? I think it's the same. It's the same info really that we've had in the others. Okay, let's leave it there. We've gone 45 minutes here. So I think, you know, somebody who had humility, somebody who had the ability to self-reflect, somebody who had a modicum of shame, somebody who had any sense actually of British values, and also the things that made this country good in the first place, like standards, for example, like standards, people, okay, would go away and self-reflect. You know, he should just go away out of the limelight for a while, Goodwin. Stop promoting this shitty book. Stop going on GB News. You know, say, I'm going to just step back a little bit and reflect on why I'm such a colossal fuck-up as a human being, and then come back with humility, ready to listen to people, rather than behave in the manner that he has done in the past few months. And now he, you know, there's a kind of poetic justice to it all. You know, they always say that, you know, what people give out in the world, they'll get back somehow. And this is basically what's happening to Goodwin. He's put out a lot of negative stuff into the world. He's getting a lot of that back, and he absolutely deserves it. If you want to know how to write, how to research, you can do my courses here. Pick up those courses now, and I actually take you through it step by step, how to write, how to build an argument, how to do all of this stuff that Goodwin is getting torn apart for well. Okay, how to write well, how to research well, how to argue, how to develop an argument over the course of an essay or even over the course of a book. I've written many books too, good ones that you should buy and read instead of Goodwin's. And I have no kind of shame or compunction in saying that, because I stand by my, I think my work is good, unlike his. I think my work is good and I'm proud of it because I worked hard for it. And I wish he would have more respect for himself and for his audience to actually put the work in, actually do a good job. Because if he actually cared about the country, he'd have done a good job on this book. He doesn't care about the country, doesn't care about his audience, doesn't care about anyone. He's just pursuing his own narrow interests, his own wallet, his own career, right? That's all he's pursuing, Goodwin. And everybody now sees through him. I always knew he was a bad un. Some of my buddies did many videos on Goodwin back in the day. They identified him as a bad un. Say, well, there's the curse of academic Asian. If he takes against you, it's all downhill from there. There's a reason for that, though, because the people I tend to have a problem with are exactly people like this. Baddens. People whose heart is not in the right place. Inauthentic people. Sniveling toadies. Careerists. Fakes, in other words. Containment agents. These are the people I always have a problem with. And it's funny because whenever anyone has a run-in, they tend, from that point onwards, to do that. So I kind of go an eye for these things. Same thing happened with, I mean, countless people have had that trajectory after they've had that run-in. I haven't actually had a run-in with Matt Goodwin. I just really dislike what he's been, the stance he's taken, his appearances, his arrogance. And now he's getting all the things that he deserves right now. He deserves to lose the seat. He deserves to get all of this pushback and vitriol that he's getting online. Hopefully, if he runs again, he'll lose again. Or Reform will just get rid of it. If Reform are smart, they'll get rid of him right now, because he is a liability. He's a liability to the party, liability to the country. Shouldn't really be doing anything. I mean, that somebody who churns out a book this sloppy shouldn't be writing policy. Because if he's sloppy here, he'll be sloppy there as well. Artless, unintelligent, No ideas. Derivative. To think this is the caliber of person who dares attack yours truly. Okay. Bye, everyone.
If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.